Doctor, look.
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Hey, welcome everybody, Dr. Homebrew. We're back here with another few beers to drink, and I think we're actually going to even be talking about some off flavors again. We're going to do Brian's off flavor corner.
Brian squared.
Yeah. And
our off flavor corners.
Or off flavor corners. That's right.
Or off kilter, as we
usually
are. Because
we are not only just here to drink your beer, but we're here to talk to you about potentialities of what could possibly happen with your beer if you don't listen to us, which is really, really what the show is all about. We want you to listen to us, and you know, that's it. That's all I'm going to say about that. Before we get too far into the show, though, I want to thank our sponsor, Five Star Chemicals. Go to 5starchemicals.com, learn about every single little thing you can do to make your beer better, which is mainly cleaning and sanitizing your home brewing equipment in that order. There is no such thing as a product that does everything as well as, Five Star products do step by step. Clean one product, sanitize, use a different product. That's what happens. That's what professional breweries do. If you want your beer to come out tasting just as good or better, if I know some of you, you know, anyway, you'll do what I say. And really, it's just regurgitating what Five Star says. So check them out, fivestarchemicals.com. Brian Cooper, Brian Shar, how you guys doing, man? You guys doing all right?
Well, we're surviving. The fires are still burning very near here, but the smoke went away. I didn't think I was going to be able to sit outside in my normal hangout here
in your office.
Have a kid. You know, yeah, my office.
Well, yeah, the smoke has been terrible, and today's the first day that I'm able to see the like the foothills. Like, well, I say the foothills. It makes it sound like I have a bay window exposed to the valley, but it's like through these two houses, I can sort of see two mounds in the foothills. And today was the first day I could see them in a week because of the smoke. Yeah. So hopefully, I know the big fire near us, Brian Cooper, well, I say near us again. Well, it's nearer to you. That's like 25% contained now, which is great. It was holding at 10 for a couple days. So.
Yeah.
It's already like the second biggest fire the state's ever had. So yeah. Thank you, first responders. You guys are a lifesaver, literally. Yeah. Like, it's when you look over the hill, I didn't see like flames from my area here, but from parts of Livermore, you could see flames over, you know, down Mines Road. It's just, I think they're doing preventative burning to keep it from crossing over that and threatening our city. So, you know, thank you to all of them that they're working on that.
Like Brian Shar, how is that smoke out in Martinez? Because you're closer to the Vacaville fires. We're like surrounded by fires right now.
Yeah, we're like, 18, 20 miles from the Fairfield Vacaville fires. Mm-hmm. It's been pretty smoky off and on for a few days. But yeah, like Brian was saying, I think it's just under containment enough now and the winds are just right that rather than being like 100 degrees and smoky and having to have all the fans on in the apartment and just blowing the smoke all through, it's actually been pretty nice today.
Yeah.
And it's actually just without the AC being on, windows are open, it's pleasant, it's comfortable, it's not smoky. Maybe it's just blown out my my nose. I don't know. maybe that, or I've got coronavirus and I can't smell anything.
Yeah. Well, the boomer flu. Yeah, it's interesting, man. Because like
don't call me a lot of things, but do not call me a boomer.
Well, look, man. If the shoe fits, you want to get it at Payless on sale.
I want to get like a stride, not the stride right. What do they call the ones that the old people like?
Right.
The hush puppies.
Hush puppies.
I'll get myself some hush puppies. Yeah. Then I'm a boomer, man.
It's been
no tie, like Velcro hush puppies. Man, I'd be like 80 years old and loving it.
It's been interesting, you know, being at home, you know, being confined as much as we are, which is to the extreme, but, you know, whatever, is what it is. And then you have this heat wave, and then you have the fires and the heat wave. It was 108 degrees and smoky 4 or 5 days ago out here. And it's like, today was the first day we could open the door and not suffocate. It was very bad. Yeah. So,
the White Walkers are going to be knocking on your door next.
So. I know, right? All right. Well, we are joined by Ken. Ken, what's going on, my dude?
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm hoping I don't have a smoked triple with the aromas going on. And, that is not the intended style here.
No, I am drinking a smoked 805, which is new. the beer hunter and the variety. No, Ken was Ken rules because Ken sent me beer this time, so I have beer to drink along with you guys. Yeah, I'm very actually excited about that because as much fun as I like doing the show from my house, so I don't have to drive to the studio, although I do miss driving to the studio, but spending all that time, you know, we shaved like an hour and a half off the recording night. I miss drinking the beer, and so oftentimes I'm just sitting here bored out of my mind because I need to focus and I can't chime in. Now I can engage with this Belgian triple you have sent us, Ken.
I felt for you. I listened to the past episodes and I felt for you that you
Thanks,
were always
brother.
You left out. So I thought I'd try and help you out.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I really appreciate it. I really appreciate
it. It's not an IPA.
I appreciate that too. Is this the first one we're going to be doing here, Brian Coop?
All right. Let me crack the beer
is
here.
Is that it? Okay. We are doing this one. All right.
So I had a little bottle variation and I wanted to just point to this. It's there was one that was a little lower and I don't know if that, you know, if something leaked or I have all head.
I've poured nice. 100% foam.
A nice strong hiss. And I imagine as carbonated as the other sample was that this might've been hard to bottle and there could have been foaming in the,
and the like.
It's the rare beer that I'll pour as a judge with a tipped glass here. So
an amazing jar, no doubt.
Belgian triple had a really, you know, the first bottle had a good fill level, so I used that one to judge last night when I worked on it. I had a nice hiss. The foam started creeping up into the neck. Actually, this one's kind of popping up a little bit, but it's not as severe as that one I judged last night. So I might get some flavor variation here too. So I'm going to kind of go with it as we go along. In the nose, it had a peppery, kind of a medium high peppery quality. The fruit was fairly big as well, with some bitter orange and kind of a lemon skin impression. Low spiciness, and a medium low alcohol note is evident. Kind of a medium low perfumey and earthy and floral hop note in there. I didn't get any DMS or diacetyl, just a fairly clean Belgian fermentation apparent. And there's a fair amount of complexity there. I liked the nose quite a bit.
Nose.
Appearance-wise, it's medium gold with a fluffy white head of mostly finer and some larger bubbles. Just moderately hazy, not super hazy, a little bit of haze in there that should be cleared up for a little better appearance. Had some good Belgian lacing and great head retention. So, you know, close to full points, just cleared up a little bit and there would be full points for appearance there. So flavor-wise, when I taste it, it comes in with kind of a stronger kind of orange pith in the flavor. The flavor was different than I expected from the aroma, so it changed me a little bit. The pepperiness is still there, but it's a little more biting, and then it's getting maybe covered up by some of the other flavors in there. Kind of the not the brighter fruit flavors, but kind of slightly dulled fruit flavors. Yeast derived fruity esters. But there's something going on with them a little different in this, and it's weird because it doesn't come through very much in the flavor, but it does change or doesn't come too much in the nose, but it does change in the flavor. So the alcohols are very, very firm. I thought I got just a little bit of solvent, but not too heavy. Pretty big bitterness in there to me, and I'm not sure if that's from like the impression of bitterness from the phenols that are in there combined with something else, but it has the impression of some bitterness. It doesn't seem like a big hop bitterness, or like a, obviously not a roasted malt bitterness or anything like that, but, and it's also got a pretty dry finish. So that kind of comes out sharply. And then, you know, the alcohol is pretty evident there. The phenols just seem a little harsher in the flavor, partly because of that dryness and the, and they're giving that impression. The alcohol is I'll get into the mouthfeel next, but it's warm. There's some, I almost thought there was something a little nutty or almond like in this or something I was trying to get at, like, I don't know, a marzipan almond or something.
It's cyanide. Something odd in there. Ken put cyanide in here. We're going to die.
Yeah. Been waiting for that to happen.
You know, ever since I learned that cyanide had like an almond like taste or aroma in some stupid spy movie, literally every time I taste or smell it, I go, well, that's it.
Something that's like,
yeah, I don't know. It's weird, man.
Mm-hmm. No cyanide. I'll reveal a little early. No cyanide. Okay,
thank you. Right. Early reveal.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
Everybody else stops drinking it.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. So it's just a little odd in the flavor.
Yourself on a podcast.
Something a little odd there in the flavor. And it makes the malt taste a little grainier in the aftertaste too, kind of. Just.
I get a solventy.
A little odd way.
I can get a solventy. Yeah. It's to me, this tastes a lot like I could confuse this with you adding a bunch of orange blossom honey to this beer.
Yeah.
Where it, I mean,
yeah, honey like. Yeah. It could be some oxidation creeping in. I don't know. But this bottle had a lower fill too, but the other one was filled up perfectly. So
you were talking honeysuckle. I thought, didn't you say something about the honeysuckle? Or maybe I
like marzipan or like almond, like, you know, not, something oddly nutty, but
because I get a honeysuckle, a
minor note.
Yeah, I get a honeysuckle, and I think that sweetness combined with maybe the oxidized flavors or I don't know, there's something that sort of combines to make it taste like orange blossom honey, which I've made a lot of beers with, bright. A lot of meads with. So I guess maybe I'm. That's my memory, you know.
Yeah.
My taste
I just want
memory.
The triples to be a little, have a brighter fruity edge. I guess bright is not really a flavor, but like just a nice, clean, fresher, fruity ester compared to the way it's displaying here. But mouthfeel wise, I'm getting quite a substantial warming effect going down all the way down into the chest. There's definitely something hotter in there, but. It doesn't seem like the alcohol level is like way off the charts. It's just it's firm, but then there's a little extra and it's a little warming. Medium light bodied, with a very very high CO2 level. The beer's not creamy, but it has a moderate biting astringency, possibly the combination of the carbonation with the phenols in there. The alcohol warmth. You know, it's medium alcohol warmth, I would say, but just a bit hot, and it comes down further because of that. It's not overwhelming. It's just there, and you notice it, and it warms you up a little bit. Usually, you know, this a triple should be a little more deceptive. But the overall impression, it really had a nice, promising aroma. I liked that. It turned slightly more harsh and odd in the flavor, the mouthfeel. Just not as smooth and tricky of a beer as I hope. I had nice complexity, but it wasn't like the kind of beer that's like, okay, you take a sip, it's like, oh, there's a little alcohol in there, and then you finish the glass and you're like, whoa, there was a lot more alcohol in there than I thought. You know, the alcohol makes itself very very well evident, very well known here, so I gotta work on hiding that to have a more enjoyable balanced triple. And figure out a way to kind of brighten up the estuary flavors. I don't know if there is some oxidation creeping in here, or if it's changed over time a little bit, but the orange does take a twist to that kind of pithiness in the flavor, and I suspect with that honeysuckle kind of honey like flavor coming in, that's probably what is playing off the nice. There are probably brighter fruit flavors earlier on in the beer's life, maybe, or I don't know. But try again. It seems like a good recipe and good ingredients. But I give it a 30. I thought it was, it's a very good beer. It just needs some fine tuning. So I'll see what Brian has to say about it as well. And we'll discuss, and then we'll talk about your recipe. I'm interested to hear what you put in it.
All right, Brian Schaar.
All right, Ken, I have to ask you the question I have to ask everybody. Are you in a homebrew club?
I am. I'm in the Royal Oak Area Homebrew Club. We don't have any fun acronym or name or something like that. So it's very generic. But yeah, we're about 30 pretty active members in the club right now.
Oh, nice. That's pretty really good. A good size because yeah. That's enough to do different things, but it's not so big as to get unwieldy. So
yeah,
very cool. And I will have to share with everyone for the sake of HomebrewCon that shall not be. I'm drinking your beer out of a HomebrewCon 2019 nice. Providence, Rhode Island tasting glass. So go AHA. If you're not a member of the AHA and listening to this show, you probably would want to be a member of the AHA. So go ahead and do it. There, we got the plug. Okay, Homebrew Clubs, AHA plug. All right, let's talk about your beer. I like this beer. Talking about the bottle, I didn't look at both bottles. I pulled one out of the fridge of the two that you had sent. It had a good fill. It was appropriate, the fill level, everything else. So I just X'd that out there. I did notice that this isn't an effervescent beer, but it did, the head came up in the glass a lot more than I'd expect even an effervescent beer to have. But I didn't have the sort of creeping up the neck that Brian did in my sample. Maybe I just wasn't sitting there watching it enough. But when I think about the ones that creep up the neck, you can go and drink half a pint and come back and there's like a bunch of beer on the sink because it came up out of the neck. And this didn't have, my bottle didn't have that. Aroma? I thought the aroma was kind of lower overall than expected. I thought initially it was because when I judged this, it was pretty much right out of the refrigerator, but I came back to it a few minutes ago after it had warmed up for about an hour. And it was still maybe not quite as much of an aroma as I had expected. Again, maybe I'm just a little bit stuffed up from the fires or something, but it didn't seem like it was as large as I would want from a triple. It doesn't have to be gigantic, but I just wanted a little bit more. Low to medium malt, got a little bit of berry type character from fermentation. There is that kind of distinct fruity ester Belgian yeast fermentation smell. And it definitely has this, along with that spicy phenol that you get from the Belgian / Trappist yeast at a low level. No hop aromas, no off aromas, gave it 7 out of 12. Appearance, 3 out of 3. Very large head. It is persistent, which is great. It's very white, too. It's an achievement to get homebrew head on that beer to be as white as that is. Clear with a very slight haze. I note that the style guidelines mention this beer has good clarity. And no, I guess it does have good clarity, but you know, good is never a descriptor one should use on a score sheet, even if it's in the style guidelines. Color is medium gold. So yeah, 3 out of 3 for appearance. Flavor, initially flavor is medium sort of malt sweetness. I get sort of a Pilsner malt character from that. Low phenol spice and kind of a medium berry ester come up next. Bitterness kind of just barely balances the malt, which is what you expect from this beer. I get a low spice. The spice character could as easily be the ethanol, because I don't get fusels in this beer at all. This is a high alcohol beer, but you don't get harsh high alcohol in this one. What you get is ethanol, which can, to me, come across sometimes a little sweet, sometimes a little spicy. It kind of has, to me, both characters when it's clean ethanol. Very well attenuated, which is great. I'll be curious to hear what your OG and your final gravity were, but it drinks well attenuated. Balances to malt. There's no hop flavor, and the finish is kind of a long, malty, with some spice and fruit in there. As it warms up, I did get a little something maybe excessively sweet in the finish, but it doesn't taste under attenuated. So I'm going with that being the ethanol. So I gave it 13 out of 20 on flavor. Mouthfeel, 5 out of 5. Carbonation is high. This is supposed to be a highly carbonated beer, and it is. That's partly what causes the huge head. Low warming. Creamy, not astringent. You know, it's everything about the mouthfeel is good. Overall impression, 7 for a 35 out of 50 total score. I really like this beer. I love the dryness and I love just how clean it is. I might like just a little more spice and fruit complexity. And I've kind of wondered, even though mine didn't gush, the fact that Brian had a little foam creep up into the neck makes me wonder if maybe there was some kind of wild yeast that got in here, even at kind of a low level, maybe very late in the process, because that might explain why the such a giant head, just even though effervescence alone doesn't necessarily cause that. And it might explain why the aroma and the flavor maybe aren't quite where I expected them to be, because that's the type of thing that the wild yeast are going to chew up to just create foam and carbonation. So
a good level of sediment, down at the bottom too. So I think this is bottle conditioned.
Yeah. So it wasn't like it went, and I'll be curious. I agree with you. It just didn't look like one that was put into the bottle, you know, from a keg, you know, 5 days ago or something. But yeah, overall 35 out of 50, I enjoyed it, and I will drink more while we hear all about this beer.
Excellent. Ken, what do you think, man?
So the beer that I'm trying to, we're trying to work around in this is a beer that we had in Bruges called Stama Dahare. I'll send you guys a little link there if you guys want to look at what I'm talking. But the trick on this beer is there's a head on this beer that lasts forever. So this is the actual glass that they serve it in.
Oh, wow.
There'll be a good 2-inch glass on there that will stick around for 10 minutes. But it's not extremely, it's carbonated, but not like, you know, so carbonated that, you know, just prickly on the tongue and craziness and stuff like that. So we're trying to figure that out. So the grain bitterness, this is brewed a year ago now. So this beer it's been a while that we did this one. So it was a 12-gallon batch, 80% Castle Chateau Pilsner, 12.5% raw wheat malt, white wheat malt, and then 7.5% Avangard Munich malt. Mashed in around 152. We had 3 ounces of Sterling hops at 60 minutes for 26 IBUs, and that was it. And the yeast for this one was, we did the Imperial Triple Double, which is the West Mall yeast. So use that there. Fermented from 67, I let it free rise up to 71 and kind of held it from there. OG was 1076. The final gravity was 1016 for an ABV of 7.9. The original one we did, so we did this one prior as well. So this is the second version. The first version we did was closer to the Stama Dahare that we've had before, which is, it's an 11% triple, which is extremely high, but it drinks like candy. When you go there and have it, they will serve you three and then cut you off, which three is probably a lot for what you do. If you walk out of there stumbling after three.
Yeah, man.
So, but the trick is we're trying, that's why I kind of want to see what, you know, one, this is a lower strength version. So it's just more of a standard version triple that we did. But I want to try and get you guys feedback and see what we can do to, the carbonation, I agree, is very high. So I, you know, Brian Shari mentioned about an infection. It's really more an intentional trying to get that carbonation up there to try and give it that big fluffy head that sticks around for a long time. That's what we're trying to figure out, that balance between.
I'd say you achieved that with the head. Like both, yeah. When I drank it last, I was just amazed how it just hung in there. There was like, it started out super dense and thick, and it just stayed and stayed and stayed. I think you're getting a lot of that from the wheat and some of the other quality malts you're using, leaving some nice proteins in there, just medium, small chain proteins, and keeping the head up nicely. You achieved that.
Yeah. And like you said, it was bottle conditioned, but.
Yeah. It may just be, you know, when it was fresher, I imagine it tasted quite different and more, but I mean, these, you know, you can age them a little bit, but year, it might be getting a little long in the tube.
Getting to the end of the line there.
It's, you achieved what you wanted with that. I would, you know, I think that some of the graininess and the flavor is coming from the wheat, and you might try something else in there, you know, I don't know, maybe some, I don't know, something else just to play with. I don't know if you want another, you know, some carapils or some, I don't know, some oats or something fun. It just that, like something to give it a little more, protein and not have the super grainy taste of the wheat. Because to me, that like kind of, you know, it can be a little bit weedy, but it's starting to just taste kind of grainy in the aftertaste after everything went away. And it's like, okay, and, you know, that's not what I wanted in my triple, but it's good for what it is. I like it. But I don't know what you think, Brian.
Yeah, go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, ingredients-wise.
Yeah, ingredients-wise, yeah, I don't really have anything to add other than what Cooper has said. I've been kind of sitting here thinking while he's been talking about ingredients, about fermentation temperature, and I kind of vacillate between wondering if a free rise to 71 or 72?
71, yeah.
If a free rise to 71 isn't essentially the same as setting it at 71, because you're going to rise up to 71 pretty quick. But 71 is also not super out of bounds for fermentation temperature for an ale, especially an ale like this that you want to have some yeast-based flavors from. So, and you said, how long was this in the bottle, did you say?
Oh, it's been in the bottle for probably close to 11 months now, 10 okay. Months.
Yeah, I think that maybe some of what I look at when I think about this beer, like we were chatting earlier, like why is it not quite the level of aroma and flavor that I would expect from a triple? And Brian talked about the gushing, and I thought, well, maybe there could be some wild yeast or something, but there's no oxidation. I'm not getting cardboard in this. And I'm generally pretty sensitive to the cardboard for oxidation. I see JP is kind of shaking his head a little bit.
It's the only thing I can think of with it. Maybe not oxidation as like with a cardboard flavoring, but it feels like the malt is browned a little bit. It feels like there is some fading of. It feels like an older beer. And look, maybe it's because, you know, this arrived on my porch a couple days ago when it was in triple digits. So maybe it's more heat damage than it is oxidative. But, you know, it's almost an 8% beer with a lot going on. So if there is cardboard, you definitely could be hiding it. Also, you know, to your point, Ken, about the carbonation, like I just, you know, topped this off.
Yeah.
And it's the carbonation is still there, but it's not that big fluffy head that you're talking about. And when I'm pouring the beer, you know, you get a lot of those tight bubbles, but a lot of the bubbles are also very big. And then they sort of like peel away from the sides and then move towards the center. So, I think there is some sort of contaminant in there because there are sharp flavors. But I wonder if that has eroded some of the aromatics and the actual like smoother flavors of this beer as well.
But JP, to your point about the oxidation, that explains maybe why to me when it got a little warmer, I tasted kind of almost a honey at the very end of the flavor.
Yeah.
And that's all. And you're right because oxidation can. If it does, it can go to cardboard, but it can also go to honey. Mm-hmm. And it's not like a super big honey flavor. But there is that kind of almost honey-like in the finish. And as you also point out, you know, it's UPS. So it got delayed by a day when it was 103 here.
Yeah.
And then I came home from work and it's sitting on my porch and it's 103. And it was probably on the UPS truck for days at 103. So frankly, I'm shocked that it was drinkable, much less something in the mid-30s.
Yeah.
We should do a graph of our scores year over year and see if there's a dip in August. It's like, you shouldn't have entered in August, man.
Related to the outdoor temperature for the week previous.
Yeah.
I did see the temps when I saw the temps when I shipped it out and I was like, oh, that's not gonna be good.
Yeah, I saw the package and I was like,
it's still a year old though.
Yeah, and I was like, "Oh, this is a homebrew dude. This dude is ballsy because I would never." But it is like you said, it's a year old, so there could be there's an age too. So yeah, who knows, man? Who knows?
So the yeast in the bottom of the bottle kicking something out a little bit. You know, I mean, the yeast having the bottle conditioned for a beer like this is great because the yeast will reabsorb if you keep it at a nice cellar temperature. Yeah. It'll reabsorb oxygen and keep it nice for longer. But at a certain point, you just can't push it that hard.
Yeah.
102. Yeah. I would try. Maybe, you could try a version of this too with a little stronger and with just the Pilsner malt, you know, and or less of the wheat, because the wheat's doing its job, but, and you know, you want that head, but you know, traditionally I was trying to think of other things you could add. I mean, traditionally it's mostly just, you know, it's not like you're using a really solid Pilsner malt, and that's, you know, those flavors are going to come through more fully if you just use that and a little less wheat maybe.
Right. Sounds good. Ken, what do you think? Anything else? Oh, did you give us the recipe?
Yes.
He did. Yeah, he did. Yeah,
okay, what was I doing? Jesus Christ. I'm like, I get absorbed in the chat sometimes. I'm like looking to see if anybody's chatting anything, and I just tune out for 30 seconds or whatever.
You so were drinking 8% beer.
Wait, there's people also in the chat?
Well, it's mainly me saying hi, and no one responding. So. All right, Ken, well, if that's it, man, we'll let you go.
Thank you, guys. Cool. Stay safe out there.
All right, thanks, man. Yeah,
thanks, Ken, you too. Beer.
Yeah.
Cheers, guys.
We'll see you on the next show. That's cool. All right, we're going to take a quick break, everybody, and we're going to come back and we're going to talk. We're going to be discussing, what are we discussing, Brian Schaar, I believe it is.
Yes, we are drinking a blonde ale after the break.
Oh, that's the next show, actually.
The next show. Oh, are we drinking after the break?
Well, you had an idea. Spoiler alert. What we talk about?
Brian Schaar.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We're just talking about stuff after the break. Off flavors, I believe.
Okay. I appreciate that. All right, everyone, stay tuned. This is Dr. Homebrew, and we will be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Now, back to the examination.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. Thanks for hanging on with us. Thanks to Ken for sending his Belgian triple. And then now we're going to hear from the lovely Brian Schaar about off flavors. Anything? Well, what specifically, Brian Schaar?
Well, you know, I was a little bit thrown by you referring to me as lovely.
Yeah.
But that is a lovely sentiment. So thank you very much.
Sorry to make you horny before talking.
Well, I don't know that you can. Let's not go into that.
Go ahead.
We've talked about off flavors on the show before. We've had Brian's off flavor corner, and we're going to have Brian's off flavor corners today. And we've talked about some of the common ones, you know, the diacetyls and the DMSs and things like that. And I think that we wanted to talk about some of the ones that might be a little more obscure, but ones that still do come up in the course of judging. And I will lead off with a anecdote from the very first time I ever judged homebrew at the old Golden Pacific in Berkeley, which is now Trumer Pills. But Golden Pacific had everybody, I believe, you know, forget the competition even, but they had like a rabbit warren in a little rooms, and they put like four judges in each room. And I got to judge barley wine for my very first time ever judging homebrew. And there were like nine barley wines. And me and my judging partner were tasting ours. And the other two people at the table are a different team, and they're judging something else. And I hear one of them say to the other after they've judged a beer and still judging a different one. One says to the other judge, I taste rosemary and dirt. And we both, the guy I was judging with and I looked at each other, and we both pretty much in unison turned to the side and said, save us some of that, because it just sounded so weird and obscure that I wanted to taste like, A, what a beer that tasted like rosemary and dirt tasted like. Is that really what it tasted like? And B, just how the heck did it get that way? And how do you stop that?
Right.
And that's definitely, I mean, rosemary can be pleasant if it's intentional. Dirt is never really going to be pleasant unless you're like two. And even then it's probably not pleasant. It's probably just pica and being 2 years old. But dirt, something that tastes like dirt, is definitely mold. Hmm. And that's something that can occur in beers that you're aging. It's not that common.
Usually with the oxygen presence, you know, but in a sealed bottle, you would think it would be a lot less common.
Well, kind of what I think had happened, as to my guess, as to this one anyway, is that a barley wine is often something that, especially back in the day, something that somebody might be aging in a carboy or in a 5-gallon bucket, and it might be sitting there for months before it gets bottled.
Oh,
and that's I agree with you. Yeah. Sorry, JP.
That's all. I agree with you. Yeah, 100%. Yes, a carboy, a plastic bucket, more likely than not.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And it's a thing. And if you're thinking, oh, I'm going to age this, then you also have the side benefit of postponing having to bottle a case or two or four of bottles. And I agree with you, Cooper, that if it's in a sealed bottle, you're not. Mold isn't going to be much of a concern. But if you're in a carboy or a 5-gallon bucket, you know, especially if you're opening it up from time to time to test where you are with gravity, you can get mold spores in there, especially if you're storing that beer in a basement or basement-like area where you're going to have mold tend to grow anyway. So that was kind of my opinion as to where that had come from.
Well, now the rosemary and dirt, you think, okay, those are very distinct flavors, but anything that has mold in it, you would also think might have a real musty cellar-like flavor too. And a barley wine is a pretty hoppy beer. I would say that when it's younger, fresher flavors, and some of the dank hops, can be just marijuana-like hops can be described as minty or rosemary or thyme. So like there could be, you know, and earthiness too is another, soil, Josemin is another hop derived flavor that can come out in some beers more than others, just with certain hops that throw that. But I would think in an aged barley wine, that might be more prone to aging out and not really being there anymore. Yeah. But just to play the devil's advocate and throw another angle at it, you know, I mean, we're speculating here, all of us. So
right. No, I totally agree. And we're speculating about some of the more obscure off flavors, which, by the way, you know, I happened to see the other day a Lagunitas Hi-Fi Hops, which is a cannabis beer that has like, you can get it with just CBD, like 5 milligrams THC and some CBD, or 10 milligrams of THC in a bottle. So made by Heineken, of course, because you know, Heineken owns Lagunitas. But they like the weed in the Netherlands, so that makes a lot of sense. But I've tasted that home brewers have made where, hey, look, I put some cousin in my beer, and it's never good. I can't imagine this I'm willing to try a little Hi-Fi Hops at some point just to check it out, but it's one thing if your hops have kind of a danky character, but please, for the love of God, don't put the actual cousin in beer. It just never works. It's kind of by definition an off flavor. I wasn't going to talk about that, but that just kind of made me think of it.
Yeah, there could be occasional meaty beers that aren't that bad.
Yeah. I mean, I think to Char's point, it's extracts versus flowers. So I think the medi beers, like you're saying, or some of these commercial examples are most likely not adding whole flowers to any sort of bright tank. It's probably oils or some other delivery system, like that.
Yeah, probably some kind of distilled terpenes or whatever, where they've taken the, and you're not getting the green matter and anything else. So that's a couple of off flavors. One that I was looking at a little bit to discuss with the increasing popularity of kettle sours is the butyric acid, which you're probably not going to get too much just in regular home brewing. But butyric acid is the baby vomit. Mm-hmm. And like anything, babies are cute, innocent little creatures, and nothing that comes out of them smells quite as vile or disgusting as what comes out of a full-grown adult human. But baby vomit is still not pleasant or nice, and you certainly wouldn't want to be smelling that in a beverage you're trying to drink. And the thing with the butyric acid is that it really likes the temperatures that lacto does. So lacto likes that. I always kind of forget. Is that like 105, 110 Fahrenheit? Kind of that, you know, 100 to 110, somewhere around there. That's the ideal temperature and the ideal environment for lacto to grow. It's also the ideal temperature for the bacteria that make butyric acid to grow. So there's one of the virtues of kettle souring is that you can get some sour character pretty quick in 24 hours or so. Boil that, or at least, in my opinion, heat it up some without fully boiling the result. So you kill all the bacteria, and then you've got a product you can dispense out of your homebrew lines, your commercial beer lines, and not have to worry about having dedicated sour lines and infecting everything else that you're pouring.
Right.
And I think that, I don't know the exact bacteria that causes the butyric acid, but nevertheless,
usually,
having said that,
Clostridium.
Clostridium? Okay.
Ooh, whoa.
Thank you, Brian. You busted out the microbiology here. You're going to make
you the
my...
the Barnes guide here. Yeah, but no.
That was my clan name in World of Warcraft.
Flavor-wise, though, it's pretty awful stuff. It's like baby sick, putrid, rancid, spoiled butter, rancid, spoiled milk, vomit. Like, it's not pretty stuff. You don't want it in beer.
No, you don't want to be drinking that.
It does thrive at the more acidic ranges of pH as well. So
yeah, and I think this is one that to me just goes to just basic sanitation and brewing practices. I know that there's folks that love to just essentially take a handful of grain at like a homebrew level, not at a commercial level, but people that will do like a sour mash by there's bacteria on the grain naturally. I'll put the grain in. And that natural bacteria, the lacto and the natural bacteria will sing kumbaya and hold hands and do some hippie shit. And then we're going to have some sour beer. And that can happen, but you don't know where that grain has been. And that's Clostridium is, if you're going to get it from somewhere, just old grain that's coming from a sack, that's who knows how clean that grain is or anything else. You're increasing the chances of something you don't want growing at a temperature and an environment that you've designed to foster bacterial growth. So using a lacto culture, using the Good Belly, any of the 100 places you can get lacto at a health food store or a homebrew store or whatever, I think you're better off just like you would with yeast in a ale or a lager. You're better off controlling the bacteria you put in for kettle souring than you are just tossing a handful of stuff in and hope it goes well.
Yeah. You know, the problem with beers that we've had, kettle sour beers that people say, oh, this is with a Good Belly or whatever, it always ends up tasting like yogurt to me or like probiotic drink. Yeah. And I wonder if there's a difference between the bacteria that they're using in that Good Belly stuff versus the bacteria that maybe you can get cultured from like a White Labs or something like that.
I mean, it's intended to, populate your gut with healthy cultures as opposed to ferment beer. So
yeah, or taste. So it always ends up tasting that kind of like chalky. You know, I don't know. It's just like I'm drinking yogurt or like Activia or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I've heard people do that, and it was on one of the other Brewing Network shows, and I can't remember if it's Brew Strong or Sour Hour or which one. Where they were some brewer was discussing using multiple strains of lacto for complexity as opposed to just a single strain. And I can believe that if you've got, four different kinds of lactobacillus, because there's a whole bunch of different species of lactobacillus, you're probably going to get more complexity of flavor. But yeah, I also agree that, you're kind of rolling the dice when you're using a product that's intended for populating your gut rather than fermenting beer. Mm-hmm. You're never quite... I don't think you'd ever be quite sure what's going to happen there.
No.
You might look out and get a good result sometimes, with the right flavor combinations of other things.
Well, and to be clear, they taste, fine. They're drinkable, right?
But put some fruit in there. Go for a fruited yogurt beer.
But there's and that's just for me. Like, it's just underlying kind of yogurt thing.
Yeah. Now, another one that we can talk about, and then we can see if we want to talk about some others or possibly just stop there. I'm not sure. Is that really an off flavor to me, but an off perception? I learned a while back that if I'm judging a competition, one of the things they often give you to cleanse your palate are saltines. And gosh, back when I was taking the exam for the first time, we had a study group in Los Altos, and we probably had like 10, 15 people there. And there was one night where every single beer tasted metallic. And it was almost kind of a joke because we'd go through, we'd do our score sheets and we'd share them with each other. And everyone, I'd say metallic. And people were like laughing, like, why, you're the only one that tastes metallic in all these. What's wrong with you? I realized it was the saltines. Because what is salt? Salt is sodium chloride. It's a metal. Well, it's got a metal in it. I mean, it's not metallic.
Salt is a metal. You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Salt is a metal.
Saltines are metal. Film at 11.
I'm going to make my car out of salt now.
Yeah, I mean, you might want to get some hardened salt on that head gasket or something up there just to be sure you don't blow anything out.
But
because sodium, a component, one of the components of salt is a metal, I think that and I've chatted with people about this. I'm not the only person. Certainly not everyone has this perception, but be wary if you're drinking beer and all of a sudden everything is tasting metallic and you've just had something real salty, ostensibly to cleanse your palate, or even if you're just not judging and you're at home, you're eating something salty and your beer's not tasting great. Maybe, you know, walk away from the salty thing for a little while. And that probably will improve your perception and make the beer taste less metallic.
See, so here's my complaint about judging. One of them, anyway. And someone in the, actually it was Ken in the chat mentioned that unflavored rice crackers is something he says, I saw a Cicerone push for cleansing the palate. And it's like, you know, as beer judges and as homebrew people, we know what to do to taste or to judge a beer properly, to taste a beer fully. The saltines, that whole kind of thing. But you go to any judging event early in the morning, it's 9 o'clock, they're serving you fucking orange juice. They got everything bagels with fucking flavored coffee. Cream cheese, coffee. Yeah, coffee. And then here, Judge Light American Lagers. And I like my first one, I sat there, I was like, are you guys fucking serious right now? Are we supposed to be able to sort of like make some impactful decisions on someone's hobby? See, Brian's drinking orange juice right now, or gravy early. I can't tell. You know, we're supposed to be making impactful choices on people's hobbies, and we're eating bagels with onions, and we're drinking coffee, and we're having cigarettes, and then we're going back to judging light American lager. This is insane to me. It's insane.
Well, and the crackers thing, as there's an article on the, I was trying to find here on the dev.bgcp.org site by Marilla Amato, talking about how this came about, that why do judges have, you know, crackers? And I always seek out the unsalted top saltines when I do a competition. Those are going to be a little better, but you know, they're really good at cutting wine, of course, and they're salty and they're grainy. Wine is fruity and acidic. It works. You know, crackers just work with wine and cleanse your palate. You're ready for the next sample. Beer is, as the author points out in this article, you should read it. It's really good. You know, is a malt based beverage? Is a grain beverage? What are saltines made of? Grain. You know, aside from just the, you know, metallic aspect possibly from the sodium, but you know, it's maybe time to let go of that and find a different, you know, product for cleansing the palate. Sometimes it's just all you need to do to cleanse your nose is where the most of the flavors come from, other than salty, sweet, you know, et cetera. Just smell something completely different, cotton or, you know, whatever your shirt's made of. Mm-hmm. Smell something completely different for a second. Maybe not coffee beans, but, you know.
Well, you know, Brian, I'd play devil's advocate with the unsalted crackers for a minute because – I think in some ways, to me, the unsalted crackers, the graininess kind of matches the beer enough that it doesn't take you away from the beer, and it doesn't insert it doesn't insert flavors in your mouth and say sucking a lemon or something. Kind of the reverse of what you talked about for wine, right? So maybe if you went the other way and had like some fruit or something, that would be good from on the one hand. On the other hand, that's going to leave stuff in your mouth that's going to maybe change your ester perception. And I kind of, to me, I like the fact that the crackers are grainy, that beer is grainy. If they're kind of low flavor crackers, unsalted, you're kind of getting the hops and the alcohol out. It's not the grain. And it matches the grain ingredient enough that it doesn't alter my perception of what I'm drinking afterwards.
Yeah. I mean, the article recommends using plain puffed rice cakes. And I think that's a good way to go because they're along those lines. It's grainy, but it's not a really intense flavor.
It's as neutral as you can get.
Yeah. I mean, they use it in Bud Light, but they don't use it in most beers I drink.
Yes. Would a two-year-old eat it? It's probably good for palate cleansing at a competition.
Yeah, exactly. Next we'll have steamed broccoli.
Gerber baby food.
Gerber judge food.
All right, there. Brian, anything else? Because we're going to take a break, if not, and then wrap
it up. It's the highlights of some of the obscure off flavors. Cooper, you have any thoughts?
I think we're coming up on 8:30 Pacific time here, so it's time to start another show pretty soon.
We're coming up on a break is what you mean, Brian. All right, thanks. Thanks a lot, Shar. I appreciate it. Good luck. God bless. I don't know what I'm saying anymore. We're going to take a quick break. Everybody hang on. We'll be right back.
Hello, fellow BNers. This is Sully from the 21st Amendment Brewery located in San Francisco, just two blocks from Giants Park. Before Nico and I opened the 21A and before I was a professional brewer, I homebrewed on my small four-burner apartment stove in a back house in Santa Monica, California, making my extract brews before graduating to the daunting idea of all-grain brewing. Homebrew books and information was hard to come by back then. The internet hadn't been invented yet, along with other things we take for granted today, like electricity and potable water. One thing I wish I had back then when I was learning was a radio show that could teach me the ins and outs of brewing and answer questions that I had about homebrewing, a resource for making great craft beer. The 21st Amendment Brewery is excited to be a proud sponsor of Dr. Homebrew, a great show that teaches you what you need to know about making incredible beer. Good stuff. Listen up, you might learn something. I certainly did. And thanks for your support. Tasty Crack Games.
The leader in affordable, high-quality kegerators is here. Introducing Komos, the kegerator designed with serious beer drinkers in mind. It features an all-stainless steel draft tower, a major upgrade over traditional chrome-plated brass towers, and Komos keeps your new tower cold with their air-cooled tower fan, wrapping your beer lines in frigid coolness. Your beer is poured from innovative forward-sealing faucets that don't leak, so they stay cleaner for longer. Dual gas inlets on the rear of the fridge allow you to run both CO2 and nitrogen gas. Serve your beer with CO2, serve your kegged wine or even cocktails with nitrogen. The digital temperature display has the largest range available, allowing you to use the Komos kegerator for fermentation if you need to. And now Komos kegerators ship with duo-tight draft fittings for that click-to-connect assembly we've all dreamed of. Buy direct from KomosDraft.com and receive free shipping on your order. That's KomosDraft.com.
Now serving patient number 189. Number 189 to the counter, please.
Now back to Dr. Homebrew.
All right, thanks a lot for hanging with us, everybody. Dr. Homebrew, we're about to wrap things up. I want to thank Ken very much for his Belgian triple, or is it tripel? I don't know. I remember being an up-and-coming homebrewer, and like you still have to figure out how to pronounce this shit. And it's like, you know, at least it's just weird. So I heard people say tripel or triple, and then you just feel like an idiot, so then you don't even say the word anymore. That's what I like to say about that.
It's actually triple, you idiot.
Damn it. The T is silent. Yeah, it's just
Let's
ripple.
Triple down on that.
Let's do that. It's ripple. The T is silent. All right. Yeah. Thanks. And thanks, Shar, for the off flavors talk. I think we should do more. The chat on Facebook was suggesting some, so maybe we can archive that. And maybe oniony, I think, was one, and all sorts of fun stuff like that too.
Don't
and,
use Summit hops. That takes care of your oniony problem.
Well, you know what? I thought maybe we can get into at some point maybe how to do hop selection as a home brewer. to avoid off flavors, because sometimes as a home brewer, you order 2 ounces from the home brew shop and it's like, well, that's just, it's what you get. It is what it is.
Yeah.
But
or what hops play more nicely together. And, yeah. You know, yeah, there's variation within just the hop, but you know, what's going to play nicely with a CTZ versus a, you know, Cashmere or a Columbus or what, you know, whatever.
Yeah. And we could bring Nate, we could bring Nate back on and,
we need,
you know,
Nate.
Yeah, we need Nate for that.
That
so maybe,
be awesome.
Maybe we'll do that next month. What do you think? All right. Anyway, well, thanks.
If he'll do it, I'm not going to social distance from Nate. I'm going to hang out with Nate wherever he. I'm going to his house.
You're going to go to his house,
like 2 feet away.
Yeah. Well, you would do that. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot again. I really appreciate it. Have fun. Be safe. Wear a mask, please. Social distance. Call your
help old ladies across the street, but from a 6 foot distance. Wearing masks.
Basically, you just push them with a big push broom across the street. And don't touch them. Don't touch anybody. Stop touching people. And I really appreciate it. If you want to send beer into the show, Brian@thebrewingnetwork.com. We need some beers. We need you. We need you to send in beers. And that's it. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot. We'll see you later.
Cheers.